the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
In the week before Christmas, Pope Francis made a one-day trip to Corsica for one simple purpose, to talk about traditional popular piety. It's a fitting theme as Christians everywhere prepare to contemplate the Nativity of Jesus. Catholic news agency's Hannah Brockhaus traveled with the Pope and brings us a report. We also get a glimpse of Christmas preparations from a pastor and a preview of Christmas homilies. We talked to Register contributor Father Dwight Longenecker. I'm Jeanette DeMello, host of Register Radio. I'm joined today by the National Catholic Register's editor-in-chief, Shannon Mullen. And before we turn to the Pope and his love of popular piety, we will be talking to another pastor, one a little bit closer to home than Italy, and that is Father Dwight Longenecker. He's pastor of Our Lady of the Rosary Church in Greenville, South Carolina. He's author of some 20 books, and he writes regularly on his blog, Standing on My Head. And he is a contributor at the National Catholic Register. His personal story is quite unique. He was a married priest in the Anglican Church before he converted to Catholicism. And so as a Catholic, he became a priest, and he absolutely knows the joys and challenges of family life as well as the priesthood. Father Dwight, it is great to have you with us again. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for the invitation.
So
happy Advent to you.
Happy Advent, right. We're not at Christmas yet. We have a few days as we're just in the weekend right before. So during this busy time of year, it's all too easy to get distracted from what should be the simplicity and yet the splendor of the Nativity. I suspect even for a pastor, it's the same. There's a bit of a busyness. How do you stay focused?
Well, I think the readings and the divine office that the Church gives us every day by day helps us to keep focused on what Advent is really about. But also in a practical way, why not use all of the Christmas decorations that you see that are going up all over the place and use that as a reminder of what we're really focused on and that we aren't quite there yet.
Absolutely. And you know, in this last issue of the Register, actually it was an issue that spans Christmas. It came out on December 15th. It was a print edition. And we featured a story where we talked to pastors throughout the country about their Christmas homilies and their Christmas preparations. So one of the pastors mentioned that at this time of year, it's easy to gloss over the real meaning of Christmas, in part because as Catholics, we've heard this story so many times. You know, we hear it every Christmas, the story of the Nativity. And sometimes it feels like there might be nothing new about it. How do you help your parishioners to enter into the Christmas story anew?
Well, I've written a couple of books about the Christmas, the Mystery of the Magi and the Secret of the Bethlehem Shepherds. And one of the reasons I did that was because I think that the Christmas story, apart from more than any other story in the scriptures, has been elaborated and built on over the years with lots of beautiful traditions and a lot of extras that aren't actually in the gospel account. Now, these extras aren't necessarily bad. Some of them are pretty awful, like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and so forth. But in the Church also, we've accumulated lots of traditions and extras, decorations to the story. And I try to go back and really look at the historical background and try to imagine what it was really like. And when we do that, it helps us to get focused on the reality that God comes into human history. He's involved in human lives, and therefore he's involved in our human history and in our lives as well.
Can you tease out, I remember these two books that you've written, The Mystery of the Wise Men and The Secrets of the Bethlehem Shepherds. These are characters that sometimes we gloss over. Let's take the shepherds. What is something from the shepherds' experience that we can make our own?
Well, the shepherds of Bethlehem, you can actually, when you go to visit Bethlehem on your pilgrimage to the Holy Land, you can go to the nearby town of Beit Sahor, which is where the shepherds actually had their experience of seeing the angels and then traveled the short distance to Bethlehem. And the importance of the shepherds in the story is that I believe they were the ones who actually passed on the nativity story to the people in Bethlehem and to their descendants, so that by the time Luke came to write the story down, maybe 40 or 50 years later, it was those same shepherds, the descendants of those same shepherds that he spoke to in Bethlehem, who related the story to them. So, in other words, the shepherds are one of the first witnesses to the incarnation.
That's wonderful. You know, I'm going to bring Shannon in here for a minute. Shannon, thank you for being with us on the show today. And I know that you have just finished the Christmas, I guess it's the edition, the print edition, right after Christmas. And there was a story from one of our writers who's in the Holy Land, Michelle Chabon. And she writes that there's a little more hope there this Christmas. What did she have to say?
Yeah, I think this has been just an unbelievable, excruciating time for the people in that area. And, you know, the reality is, as although the suffering is still great, there are signs that the war in Gaza is wrapping up. That might be too optimistic of a term, but there is some lightening up of these very draconian measures that restrict where people can go and how they can kind of move around. And there's definitely not a surge of tourists and pilgrims, which is what the Christians in particular in Bethlehem, for example, are so reliant on. But there is a little more freedom of movement, which is, you know, those folks will take that. You know, that's something positive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Father, turning back to you, I wanted to see if you would give us a glimpse of your Christmas homily. I'm guessing it's written or almost finished. What do you have to say? What's your message for your own flock this year?
Well, one of the things, and I mentioned this in the article in the Register, one of the things was one of my favorite poems during the Christmas season is by Mary Coleridge. And it's a very short little poem, but she rhymes the word manger with danger. And I use that as a kind of way of saying, you know, the incarnation of our Lord brings us to the sentimentality of a little baby in a manger, but that little baby in the manger is also the world's danger. And that, in a poem, a rhyme is something which delights us, but it also disturbs us because it's surprising. We wouldn't have thought of putting together manger and danger, but the rhyme helps us to put those two things together. And the incarnation of the Lord is just that as well. It delights us that God should come into this world, but it also disturbs us that he comes into our world and he turns things upside down. So that little rhyme of manger and danger actually helps me to see Christmas in a new way.
Absolutely. It reminds me of a story, of the story of Aslan in Narnia. And someone asks, is he a dangerous lion? And the answer, of course, is every lion is dangerous, right? But
yes.
But yeah, it's
Aslan,
nothing.
Yes, Aslan is not a tame lion.
He's not a tame lion, but that's nothing to be scared about in that story. And in our own lives, it's nothing to be scared about Christ having some danger in his life, and he gets us through the dangers in ours. I want to ask you before we go something not related to this Christmas season, but it's something that you wrote not too long ago. It also appeared in the National Catholic Register in our print edition and online at ncregister.com. And it was about a trend related to young men becoming more religious. What did you find? What did you write about?
Yeah, that is in my pastoral ministry here in South Carolina. Almost every week I have at least one young man, and when I'm saying young, under 40, who comes on their own asking about the Catholic faith and asking, wanting either curious about the Catholic faith or there. I mean, a couple of times I've had fundamentalist Protestants come to me and say, can you please bless my rosary? You know, or can you hear my confession?
Right.
And so I explained to them a bit more and explained how they can become Catholics. But we're finding this trend amongst young men. And I think the recent election and recent social trends are showing us that young men are increasingly fed up with a kind of wishy-washy wokeism in our society, which is not very masculine. And they're looking for a faith and looking for a way of life which has some backbone and has some courage to it and is a bit demanding. One guy I saw this week, for instance, I explained to him Catholic marriage discipline because he has a previous marriage that we have to help him with. And I said to him, I apologized a bit and said, I'm afraid the Catholic Church is a bit legalistic in this way because we do take marriage seriously. And he said, that doesn't bother me. That's why I want to become a Catholic.
So it's beautiful.
In other words, the Catholic faith has still has a clear teaching and a clear message and a clear discipline to follow. And I think men like that.
That's
important.
We need that kind of structure in our lives, and I think many men do gravitate to that kind of structure. Before we go, I would like to ask you, Shannon, I know there's a lot of Christmas content at ncregister.com and in the print edition. Can you give us one or two more stories that people can sink their teeth into as they prepare for Christmas?
Sure, Jeanette. One is a really interesting piece by one of our correspondents in Rome, Benedict Sendergren. And it's Christmas at the Edge of the World. Every year at the, I'll probably mispronounce this, but the Pituffik Space Base, which is in northern Greenland, they send a Catholic chaplain to the base to say midnight mass. And it's the northernmost midnight Christmas mass in the world. And it's a fascinating story about how remote these people are, including many Catholics, and it's a wonderful piece. So that's one special piece we have coming.
Yes, and that one appeared on the front page of the December 15th print edition, so we've got a picture of what farthest most Christmas mass in the world looks like, and it's a great image. This is a great story, Christmas at the End of the World. And I want to point also to Father Longenecker's column that we were talking about, The Rise of Religious Young Men, and that can also be found at ncregister.com. In these last couple of days of Advent, I wish you both a prayerful time, even despite what might be very busy running around. Thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to Register Radio on EWTN Radio. Up next, we'll be talking about how helpful popular devotions can be in staying focused on Christ. And we're going to be talking about that with Hannah Brockhaus, who brings us tips from Pope Francis. Stay tuned to Register Radio here on EWTN Radio.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, host of Register Radio. Today, I'm together with Shannon Mullen, the Register's editor-in-chief, and Hannah Brockhaus, a Vatican correspondent for Catholic News Agency. So Hannah got to go on a trip this week with Pope Francis. It was a short one. So 2 days before the Pope's 88th birthday, he received a warm welcome in the Mediterranean island of Corsica. So this is an island situated off the mainland of Italy. It's north of the island of Sardinia. And he was there to take part in a symposium on popular piety in that region. So it was an unusual trip. Very interesting one, and it caught my attention because popular piety is a great part of this year, especially around Christmas time. So we welcome back Shannon, who joined us in the first segment, and we welcome Hannah. Hi, Hannah.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So what an interesting trip you made this week. Maybe a little crazy right before Christmas, but it was, I'm sure, a good trip. So the Pope has always encouraged popular piety. So first off, let's try to understand, what does he mean, Hannah, by popular piety?
That's right. I mean, promotion of popular piety goes way back, all the way to when he was Archbishop of Buenos Aires in Argentina. But what we mean by it is expressions of the faith apart from the liturgy, the Mass. So, and why we call it popular is because they often derive from, you know, the local culture, or they're somehow steeped in the local culture. And it could be, the rosary is a popular one. Obviously, when we're speaking about the Mediterranean, religious processions are very important for a saint's feast day or a holy day. Eucharistic processions can also be part of that. I think this time of year as well, thinking about visiting nativity scenes, for example, is kind of a devotional act if you're going to go pray before a nativity scene.
Absolutely. And we know that the Holy Father has a specific popular devotion that we see him do constantly, which is to visit a Madonna, right? In most places throughout, in Rome, he's been many times to Santa Maria Maggiore, which is where there's a special devotion to Our Lady. But he does that in many of the countries he visits. He goes to a specific Marian site. He's got a great Marian devotion. And as you mentioned, right now, the nativity in our own homes, the creche scene, can be a part of popular devotion. I think of one also in this season of Advent, which is the Advent wreath, as well as maybe the Jesse tree, which my little family picked up just recently and started to do a Jesse tree. And I remember doing that as a kid. Hannah, do you have any particular popular pieties that you remember as a child or even now?
Yes, well, definitely the Advent wreath was very important in our family, and I've continued that in mine. We did the Jesse tree as well. I think, being in Italy now and participating, our neighborhood has a long tradition of doing a procession for the Solemnity of the Immaculate Conception on December 8th between two parishes that are nearby. Is also a beautiful tradition. And as well, having the nativity, I've learned living in Italy that for Italians, the nativity is the main Christmas decoration. Of course, now everyone also does Christmas trees and other things. But, because the nativity was started, they say, by St. Francis of Assisi in Italy, that one is of very, very big importance.
Mm-hmm. Shannon, I want to bring you in to this conversation. Do you have a popular piety or devotion that your family practices?
Yes. My family went all out at Christmas. My mother, mostly. We didn't have one tree. We had three trees.
Oh, wow.
We had a tree upstairs, and they each had, different themes and things like that. But really, a small thing that made a big impact on me was the Advent calendar, and every day opening up these little doors and there'll be a little picture in there. For some reason, that really fascinated me as a youngster. And they're just a nice daily devotion, just to kind of remind you of the season.
Right. Hannah, the Pope was there in Corsica for this symposium on the third Sunday of Advent, I believe, and he had a message for these times, this time of Christmas, the last few days of Advent. Can you recall what he said that really would help us to meditate on these few days before Christmas?
Reflected a lot on joy, I think, especially because he was there to speak about and to honor the importance of religious processions and these expressions of the faith. He emphasized the importance of joy and the importance of these devotions being the foundation to serving others. So he talked about sort of the spiritual ills that can afflict us, and especially this time of year with the focus on consumption and consumerism. He said, the way we get this joy back is not by just turning inward, focusing on selfishness or what we want, but on how can we serve others, how can we bring Christ to others, and how that will bring joy, and actually that's the way we really find happiness.
Shannon, do you want to jump in here?
Yeah, Hannah, I'm so curious. We ran a really interesting piece by a writer, Jean-Baptiste Noé, about these Corsican songs, these folk songs, which seem to be a mix of like patriotic themes and sacred themes. And was that part of the liturgies and some of the events in Corsica, and what were they like?
Yes, they absolutely were. I mean, they were part of every event that the Pope did that day. And of course, especially the Mass, which was sort of the big closing thing for the day. It was absolutely beautiful. So some of it was chanting and some of it was even in Latin. So it did remind me a little bit of Gregorian chant, if people are familiar with that. But think a cappella chanting, sometimes with different harmonies. And then some of it was also in the Corsican language, which I learned while I was there is actually very similar to Italian. So I was able to understand a little bit of it, which was very neat. So and then Latin as well. So it was very, very beautiful singing. And that was definitely there present throughout. You know, speaking of popular piety and the Pope visiting different images of Mary, he stopped to visit the patron of Corsica, of that city where he visited, which is Our Lady of Mercy, and she's known by the affectionate term, the Madonnuccia. So he stopped and visited her, and singing was ever present.
Beautiful. Yeah. I watched a few songs on YouTube, and it was very distinctive, which is great. But like you said, elements of Gregorian chant, but other things thrown in there. It was fascinating. So, great.
As we come into this week, Hannah, you know, the usual activities of Rome, the Pope is usually at the midnight Mass or Sunday Mass. What do we expect this year? I mean, he is 88, as we said, he had his birthday this past week. So what do we expect for his schedule at the beginning, at this week of Christmas?
That's right. So he does do it's actually an evening Mass on Christmas Eve. I'm not sure. It might be the Mass at night, but he does it a little bit earlier in the evening, which you can kind of understand with his age, of course. So he'll do right. that in St. Peter's Basilica. And then the next morning, he will do, of course, the traditional Urbi et Orbi, so to the city and to the world blessing that he does every day or every Christmas and every Easter. And that is how he will mark this important holy day. Of course, he also usually, it's not officially on the schedule, but he often goes after the Christmas Eve Mass, he often goes out to St. Peter's Piazza to visit the nativity that the Vatican has there. I mean, the Vatican has, I think, at least one or two nativities in the Basilica, as well in the Pope Paul VI Hall, and then, of course, the big one they always put in the square. So he usually goes out to visit it that night, which is when they place the baby Jesus in the nativity scene.
Well, we have just a few more minutes left to the show, and there's really something very important we have to get to, and that's the Jubilee. It begins here this week. That is a huge celebration this whole year. The holy doors will be open there in the Basilica, and I'm sure in all the major basilicas. What is the significance of the Jubilee and these holy doors, Hannah?
Well, the Jubilee year that is called ordinarily once every 25 years is a huge year of grace. The Church declares that this is a particular year of graces for Catholics. They can receive these graces in many different ways, but especially the plenary indulgence, which is the remission of the temporal punishment due to sin. And one of the main ways, although there are many, in 2025, one of the main ways is by making a pilgrimage to one of the four major papal basilicas in Rome. Obviously, that includes St. Peter's Basilica. And one of the features that's very, very important of the Holy Year is these holy doors that get opened. So actually, on Christmas Eve this year, after the Mass, it's unclear when, but sometime on Christmas Eve, around the time of the Mass, Pope Francis will open this holy door that is usually sealed from the inside, is not opened except during the Holy Year when pilgrims can walk through it to enter the Basilica.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. Shannon, the print edition, I've seen a preview of the one that's coming out at the end of the month, December 29th. It's wonderful. It's got a wonderful story about Pilgrim's Guide to the Jubilee 2025. So I invite our listeners to go to ncregister.com and look at the Jubilee content that the Register has there. Thank you both for joining us here on Register Radio. And listeners, remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. Until next week, on behalf of my producer, Rich Jesse, and myself, Jeanette DeMello, Merry Christmas.